Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally L. Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. My guest today is Gary Krasner, and possibly John Gilmore will be calling in later. I'm about to pick up Gary Krasner.
Hello.
Hi, Gary.
Hi there.
What would you like to tell our listening audience about New York State and New York City vaccination requirements?
Well, you asked me to come on the show to answer your questions, so that's why I'm here.
Right. And
obviously,
Well,
I'll just say, for those who don't know, if you want to apply for a religious waiver, you have to submit a statement describing your beliefs and why it's inconsistent with the vaccination. There's lots of discretion between different school systems and private schools, non-public religious schools have to comply with this as well. In other words, they can't refuse to review a submission on its merits. And the problem, though, is if they do, what do you do? You have to bring an appeal to the commissioner, sort of like a lawsuit. There's no agency where that can intercede and tell the school you got to do this or that. It's all judiciable, and that's a problem for parents.
Is there a cap on the number of students who can get a religious and medical exemption in New York City?
I don't know if you spoke to John about this, but John sent me a memo about that, and I included it in a lawsuit in an appeal to the commissioner. In other words, it was one of the exhibits that alleged that the appeal process for New York City, you're talking about, it violates due process. It actually violates a lot of issues involving due process, but the one you're talking about has to do with a memo that came out in which Department of Health Commissioner seems to be telling principals that there's a quota on the number of vaccine exemptions. He doesn't say it that way. He says there's a quota on the amount of students who must be vaccinated. In other words, you can't go below, I think it was 98% or something like that. In other words, you have to enforce it up to 98%. It's your responsibility to have 98% compliant students on vaccines for school. But you got to think it through. What if a school principal gets over 2% exemption requests, maybe comprising medical and religious waivers totaling more than 2% of the school? What does he do? You have a quota, and effectively, it's a quota system. So that happens to be one thing we included in one of the appeals. I don't know if it's the right venue. It might have to be taken up in state court, but it's interesting you should ask that question, because that's something that I did include in my appeal.
Well, we were just talking about how misleading the insert on the New York City Department of Education. It says all capitalized, underlined students are required to follow schedule.
You mentioned that before I came on, but that memo. Maybe I'm just numb to the kinds of tactics they use, but that's been going on for so many years. If somebody asks for an exemption, then they will provide you with instructions. But something like this, it's a memo you're talking about that discusses what the vaccines that have to be given and when, and it's for parents, and of course they're going to say all students, because that's the assumption. The exception to the rule is not included here. And that, again, that's been a problem going back 30 years. It's they've been doing that. You'd see back in the 80s, I remember Mel Kimmel from Brooklyn, an attorney, wanted to file a lawsuit against Con Ed because they did the same thing. They wouldn't mention opt-out provisions that are legal, and he felt that was it should be included for parents who wanted to know if they could opt out. So it's one of those things. One interesting thing, though, the memo you're talking about says immunization requirements for all students. It's a legal size, 2 pages. Something that's interesting, it doesn't happen with other school systems, only New York, I think. Maybe, I don't know. They have 2 levels of compliance. If you notice, it says at the top, full compliance, and below that, category of provisional requirements. And why does it matter? Apparently, from what I can tell from parents, a parent who is not at the provisional level, meaning minimal vaccinations or vaccinations that have begun but not completed and is some lacking, they're lacking, you know, some doses by that age, they are granted the grace period, the statutory 14-day grace period to comply, meaning that the child can remain in class for a given period of time while being on non-compliant, meaning that they still require more vaccines. But a person who was never vaccinated, a student, never vaccinated, they're not extended that 14-day due process grace period. And as a result, I get complaints from parents saying that the child was excluded precipitously. No warning, no grace period because, or they were denied registration because they are not at provisional, this some arbitrary level of provisional compliance. That is not universal throughout the state.
I have a question in terms of homeschooling. It says on the New York City Department of Education that you have to register your child to be homeschooled. One of the reasons is so that they follow the Common Core program. Is another reason so that they follow the immunization schedule?
Common Core would make sense, and that's a whole other story. It's more centralized state oppression, but with respect to vaccination, I don't think so, because they're exempt. New York State exempts homeschooled children from the vaccine requirements. If you're not congregating in any kind of central place, I would guess that's the reason. And the exclusion of susceptibles, which is when a student comes down with symptoms and they have to exclude susceptible, unvaccinated students, that would also be relevant, except that a homeschooled student is not in a school. So I think it has to do with what you said with maybe Common Core. I don't know. I don't know why it's required.
Okay. I know I talked to a friend who's very active in terms of vaccines, and he's going to a state college, and he said that his friend who was an online student had to submit an exemption as an online student at a state college.
It's funny. There are some colleges, if you're not in a dormitory, they're not as crazy about the vaccine issue. If you're not even taking courses, if you're not stepping foot physically on campus, if you're doing some kind of a internet class thing, I would not, obviously, plainly, a vaccine requirement wouldn't be necessary, but they still might enforce it, and you'd have to litigate that. It's unclear because, you know, the laws say a student who is attending college, what does attending mean, physically on the campus? And the exclusion penalty is moot as well because you can't attend class or campus physically, and they can exclude you physically if you are not vaccinated. But again, if you're not on the campus, why would you need to be vaccinated?
Now, in terms of herd immunity, I have read that this was based on natural immunity, having nothing to do with vaccination. Is this why they are trying to enforce mandates?
Purportedly. They want a certain level so that they can claim that the population that's immunized is going to protect the people who opt out based on medical or religious, in New York State at least. That would be the ostensible reason. Scientifically, I'm not going to get into it, but I don't support that theory. But that would be the reason. They want to have a certain level of compliance. Herd immunity would be one reason. They actually say it.
They do, because I didn't. Well, I believe they do. They certainly talk about it enough.
They do.
So, what message would you like to send New Yorkers in terms of exemption?
Well, my golden rules are: number one, you find out what. Find out the nuanced information to successfully get an exemption based on religion. My organization provides that. You can go to CFIC, Charlie Frank, Isaac Charlie, .us. One thing, though, is always find out first what the pitfalls are before you talk, but in addition, don't talk. Write. Communication is important because the way you communicate will mean what you can prove and not prove. And if you can't prove what was said or not said, the state will defer to whatever it is that the school official said. So you want to put everything in writing, email or fax or snail mail to the school. Don't have casual conversations on the phone on this issue. If you're talking about anything else, that's fine. But on this one issue, burden of proof is on you. And when I say burden of proof, think in terms of being in a traffic court and you're accused of speeding and the officer is testifying that you did speed and you went over the speed limit and he has notes and radar reading and all that stuff. You have to have objective evidence or to the contrary, or you're going to lose. The court will go with, in other words, burden of proof is on you, and that's why you see a lot of times where parents fail to get the exemption because they failed to do certain things. And one of the things is to record everything. Written communication, plus if you have an interview, record the interview. It's legal to do so in New York State. You don't have to announce it if you're part of the conversation. And what this does is it allows you to state, to prove what happened. If you don't do this, you can't prevail on appeal on a state level. So these little things like that is important. You have to remember also, there's no objective evidence of what is an optimum religious statement or not. The big variable is certain school districts are kind of strict, so you have to watch out for certain school districts and school systems in New York State. They have a high bar, whereas other schools have, you know, virtually nothing. You know, in one school system, you'd have to produce a lot of stuff. I'll give you an example. Do you have a, how much time do we have?
Oh, you have another half hour, Gary.
Oh, this is not going to take a half hour, but give you an example. Recent appeals, New York City, one woman wanted to exempt herself because she based on the so-called pro-life issue, some vaccines contain cells called diploid cells, human diploid cells that were derived from fetuses that were aborted, human fetuses. And the link there is a moral link. It's immorally tainted, you might say. And that's among issues that some people in the state of New York will use. But in New York City, beginning a year ago, I shouldn't say that, 2 years ago, the first case, I think, a woman tried to get that, and she was denied. And there were complicated issues. She didn't try enough to get the untainted vaccine that was available. But a year later, a woman came to me, and she was also denied. I guess they felt confident, New York City, to do that. The issue was there's no proof that the vaccines contain these cells. So what we did was we filed with showing proof, and we won the case. She won. The decision came down about 3 months ago, and it takes about a year. And we won that case, but it was remanded to the city. The commissioner wanted the city of New York, the Department of Education, to show if they were correct or not, to show that they were correct that vaccines, in other words, he put the burden on the city, after looking at our petition, that diploid cells are, in fact, not in vaccines. I don't know what came out of that. I asked to file an amicus brief, and I got no answer. But then another case came along this year, just about a month ago, I filed. And this time I tried to preempt. This particular parent sought an exemption based on three reasons. One of them was the pro-life issue. But she sort of downplayed it. It wasn't the most important one. But nonetheless, I put in enough information to preempt a challenge on that particular issue. And we're still waiting on the answer. We don't know yet if they objected. They didn't mention it in the stay, opposition to the stay, which is something we asked for. So it's possible they may have dropped, that may drop this issue in the next response that they give. So we don't know as of yet if this is a settled issue. There are there's two other school districts, one in upstate and the other one in Floral Park, public schools, that took issue with the pro-life issue, the pro-life rationale this year. And we got around it in certain ways, but not through litigation. So it's, as far as they're concerned, it's not settled. So that might answer your question with a little more detail.
Two questions, and you can decide if you'd like to answer either. One of them is that I had read that when there is a cap on school exemptions, and the school has not met that cap, if they have exceeded the number of exemptions, then the principal can be personally liable. Have you heard that?
No.
Principal. Then we'll talk.
The principal can. Principals and school districts are given every year a reminder that if the paperwork is not in order, they can receive $2,000 a day fines. each day they're in noncompliance, meaning that maybe the paperwork is not there and the child is lacking vaccines. And that's what happened in Brooklyn recently, if you want to get into that. But you're talking about this quota thing again, and I'm telling you, I've not heard of quotas. There's no... You're talking about some... Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
You're talking about something completely different when you're talking about quotas. This thing that we just uncovered this year with that memo, that has no relation to what you're talking about. The school principal is responsible for compliance and with one exception. New York City has a whole different agency involved. Children's First Network is assigned responsibility to monitor compliance of different types of things, including the vaccines. And so that assists the principal to get that done. But the principal still has some degree of power in New York City schools. It's just that it's been centralized to a great extent on this issue, vaccine compliance.
Well, I was kind of amazed that a principal could be personally liable.
I would be surprised if that's true, though. I personally, that's not. I don't see how that can be. Maybe the school itself, the budget, they're responsible for a school's budget, and it comes out of that school budget, but not personally. No one's bank account. No principals.
It stopped me in my tracks when I read that, and I wish I could put my hand on every article that I'm going to refer to. But I met a woman in the street who thanked me for teaching people in the street about vaccination, and she hugged me. It's certainly the first one I've ever received. But what she said to me is that she had a religious exemption for her child, but she was told at the hearing that she is not allowed to tell anyone that she's got one. There's a gag order on her. Is this typical?
No, you can't impose that legally on anyone. But it's just the opposite. Most parents don't want to be ostracized. The nightmare for one parent would be another parent approaching them and telling her that her child needs to stay away from her children, fear of disease, that kind of thing. So most parents want to reverse. They're not crusading. They want the information confidential.
Well,
since
the Freedom of Information Act expose about the vaccines and the intent to get the diseases they claim to prevent by Dr. Tomil Genovic, why hasn't this ended with the knowledge of the intent?
So could you restate that question again?
Sure. Are you familiar with Dr. Lucecia Tomil Genovic's Freedom of Information Act revealing of intent to cause the diseases they claim the vaccines are supposed to prevent? Are you familiar with this?
No. You're saying that
an
agency of government that Department of Health wants to spread disease?
Right. That's what her findings revealed. And this
Why?
Is... Hmm?
What would be the motive of that?
To give what is the revelation is the intent to cause the diseases that vaccines are supposed to prevent. This is a very big issue.
You're saying that they want to cause outbreaks so that vaccination mandates are therefore justified?
No, I'm not saying
that. Is that the motive?
I see. So the motive is the motive is to cause the diseases they claim to prevent. This has been on
That's the undertaking. But why do they want to undertake that?
Right. That I can't tell you. But the intent, whether we know why the intent exists or not, the intent is that.
Yeah, well, motive helps to prove something you're trying to attribute. I would just say this. They don't need to actually spread disease in order to justify vaccination. They could, and they do this often, blow up minor things to make it look like it's an outbreak. Long history of that. I write about it. It's a long story, but they can do it so many different ways, increasing disease surveillance of a particular disease or symptom. They did that with West Niles. They did that with polio. They did it with Legionnaires' disease, and so many, virtually every one of these outbreaks was hyped. I remember looking up West Niles' background incidence of encephalopathy in a given year, and it didn't change. It was just that they promoted those two or three outbreaks that occurred in one weekend in Queens, if you recall. That started the ball rolling. Same thing with. But anyway, my point is they don't have to actually inflict disease to get disease symptoms. Disease symptoms are always present. Most of the time, it's toxicological. You can trace it to toxins in the environment or the food supply. It's virtually identical, the kinds of symptoms you get from either one. Now, they don't send toxicologists to investigate. They always send infectious disease experts because they want the economics of finding an infectious or communicable disease is more profitable than having to clean up an environmental hazard or something similar to that. I don't want to, it'll be a long conversation if we go down that road. But I doubt if they're trying to actually spread disease because they don't have to. It's not necessary.
Let me just read you this very short thing. It says, the vaccine hoax is over. Freedom of Information Act in the UK, filed by a doctor there, has revealed 30 years of secret official documents showing the government experts have, one, known the vaccines don't work, two, known they cause the diseases they are supposed to prevent, three, known they are a hazard to children, four, colluded to lie to the public, and five, worked to prevent safety studies.
I read that a few months ago, and it was published online somewhere. It talks about it's a summary review of lots of things that we've seen over the years. But in addition, there's something happened in the UK that they tried to cover up, and I think that was the reason for publishing that. But I don't think it was about intentionally spreading disease, though, if I recall, it was something else.
Well, the thing is, I'm not even that I wasn't really referring to it intentionally spreading disease as much as that they know that the entire program is a hoax, and yet they continue to perpetrate this hoax. And
yeah, I think that's what it was about. Yeah.
Well, this is a big hoax, and it's disinformation, and if it has been established that in fact it's disinformation, how could we proceed? I mean, I've written a bill saying that vaccines are banned because of the ingredients, the diseases, and the intent. So what is left to find in an effort to ban them? What is left to find?
Well, you know, you know, health officials in the U.S. would deny that they did that in this country, or, you know, they would distance themselves from that. You know, it wasn't, I don't recall it was a, I'd have to read it again, it was a while ago.
Well, I thought they said we could ban them for the ingredients alone, the ones that we know, there are ingredients we don't know. But unless they undid all the damage of the ingredients we do know, that should be sufficient, or the diseases that are resulting.
Ask John Gilmore how hard it is to convince lay legislators that a given, just one thing, thimerosal, you know, mercury, is harmful, and how to get that out. The mindset of mainstream medicine is that toxins are okay if it's designed to prevent or eliminate or treat drugs themselves are sublethal doses of poisons. It goes way back to the allopathic school, which uses poisons to treat the human body. Look at fluoridation. Nothing phases these people when you point out that these are rank poisons, and vaccination itself is blood poisoning. But they say it helps, and that, you know,
that's where the intent comes in. You see, that's why it was such a big deal to establish
intent.
The
only
intent.
Goes so far. You have to. How do you prove intent?
Well,
I mean,
there are
conservatives who claim that liberals want to destroy the free market system so that government can be bigger and encompass our lives, et cetera, et cetera. So many ways you can prove it, but so what? The main thing is what is objectively true, okay? That's what you have to look at. Motive.
Yeah.
How do you prove motive?
Well, this is what they have all written out. This is what it took her 7 years and a judge's order to get these documents that prove motive.
When you have motive, I have to read what it says. When you had those East Anglia leaks, where you have scientists conspiring to eliminate the opposition on global warming, the dissident view, detailed conversations where they're conspiring to lie and to suppress opposing viewpoints and all that kind of stuff. That was dynamite, because that was detailed. So I'd have
You definitely have to look at my bill, Ban Vaccines 2013, because it's four parts of intent and cover-up. That's got a lot of information. It's a billion. It's on my blog, Billion Toddler March for Survival. .blogspot.com. It's the bill, and it's all there. And that's why I'm saying there should be no reason. There is no reason left to allow this lie to be perpetuated.
Yeah.
You know, I see we're all being backed into a corner in terms of exemptions and religious beliefs and New York State being, I believe, the most difficult state to get a religious exemption in. Am I correct?
Everyone tells me that. I believe it. It seems to be the case. parents from around the state call me, around the country call me, and they have a son in college or maybe someone in prep school in New York, and they tell me this is insane what goes on here. So I'm pretty sure. I mean, it's hard to imagine how hard it could be elsewhere. So I haven't heard it.
Well, John also said that they're just not giving any more, allowing any more exemptions in New York. I don't know that you would agree with him, but certainly to put a 1.2 cap, which is the number I got from John, is almost a complete and utter mandate, and their documents online give the impression that all
I know.
Of it
That's
is
why
mandated.
That's why I introduced that into this particular appeal that I'm talking about. And I'll find out what the answer is. If they don't answer it, then and the commissioner acting as judge doesn't find it dispositive or even make... That's the thing. I don't know how far we can go as far as remedy for other people. The remedy for this particular appellate is one thing. So it might take an attorney and a discovery proceeding to find out a little bit more about this thing we're talking about with respect to quotas. So it's very possible they could have meant something else. You could read it differently. It sure looks, from our point of view, that it looks like a quota. But I can give you one or two, maybe one missing other interpretation of it. But again, it depends on more information.
Well, the day we all decide to out all of the information and say we will not put up with this anymore, they will all go away, because this is what needs to happen at this juncture. We cannot tolerate the lies, and knowing the intent is sufficient, and the ingredients are sufficient, the diseases are sufficient altogether. They are a powerhouse.
Well, since 1980, I've felt the same way as that, and you couldn't be more right. I don't know. Around 1998, I felt I had to do something more concrete, so I decided to concentrate on exempting students in New York, and because a lot of people were finding it difficult around that time. Sharon Killman, you know her. She used to do that in the 80s. So I just sort of focused on that all these years, and I stopped writing about stuff you're talking about, the vaccines and diseases and stuff. But that's the impetus of it. Parents are convinced, and when they are convinced, they have to find a way to act on their beliefs. And they're surprised when they enter school system with their children and they realize that the state can dictate, that the state knows best, and that the state is going to tell you what's good for your children, just like Obamacare. You know, you're too stupid to know what policies are good for you. You have to, you need the state to tell you what you know, how to live your life. And it's the same thing with vaccination. What's good for one is good for all. The common good is the epitome of liberal thinking. You have to, what's good for the common good is the basis for much of liberal policy. Vaccine policy is no different.
Liberal is also based in liberty, you know. So I just want to say that I've always seen liberalism as...
I didn't know your politics, but I guess I flushed you out.
No. Liberty with a safety net for those who can't do for themselves. It's personal liberty and a safety net for
those
who can't do for
themselves. It's the state doing it for you.
Well,
in other words, modern liberalism.
I'm eager to help people, not control them, you know?
Well, once you have the state, the framers understood, feared two things, the tyranny of the majority and tyranny of the central government. And that's why we have negative freedoms. They had in the Bill of Rights negative freedoms, what the state cannot do. Not that they don't talk about what the state can do. The only thing the central government should be doing is very limited. You'll see that. It's enumerated. What's not there enumerated, it defers to the states. So we have vaccine laws that are enforced because in the state level because the government, central government, doesn't have the power. But they can justify it. The liberals, liberal courts have misinterpreted the Commerce Clause and the General Welfare Clause to such an extent that the federal government is huge, bigger than state governments now. It's more federal code, criminal code, civil code on the federal level. That's what liberals want. A liberal wants big government.
Let me tell you what I want. I want to know if the city, which is the more local, if they are to disregard, like put a cap on the state, would that not have to be legislated?
Here's what started this discussion before we got on the air, because we were talking about this thing about New York City mandating a flu shot, even though it's not mandated by the state. Give you an example. New York State, including the CDC recommends, and the New York State requires, that children aged 4 to 6 years of age receive a DTaP booster, the fifth DTaP booster, and their second MMR booster. New York City doesn't require the DTaP, only the MMR. Now, if a local city, a city that's assuming that the state has sovereignty over the city and towns, if a city can say, we are not going to, even though the state wants it and mandates it, the city is not going to require it. I'm talking about the fifth DTaP. If they can get away with that, which they have, apparently, then I guess they can get away with mandating a vaccine that a state is not mandating. The reverse.
Well, there's another issue here. The federal government in the Parker case, which you, I assume, are familiar with, the woman's child was given a flu shot at school, and she won her case because she did not approve of this. However, the federal government trumped the state in this case because I believe the pandemic had not been lifted since 2009. Therefore, her child's inoculation without her consent was okay, which I believe is precedent setting for other states. So
I don't understand. The federal government has a mandate for flu shots?
The pandemic law that was signed in 2009 by Obama with the World Health Organization has never been lifted since 2009. So
let me just say one thing. We're not yet world government yet, even though Obama wants it. I don't think a state can be subjected to an international law like that, unless it was ratified in the Senate. Did the Senate ratify this?
Did say that again? Did what?
Did the Senate